And it is great to be back for the, believe it or not, 243rd time, Parish of the Patriots. I'm excited. This is the show. This is my show. And don't get me wrong. I've gotten in the groove of doing the Daily Nationalist show. But this is why I'm here. Parish of the Patriots, why this is my show. Can't wait for the day Sven gets back and he can mess with the Daily Nationalist. I might do that. Except for, our show we do together on Fridays again. I like that routine. It's very nice. A lot less work. It's very good. I'm ready to get back to that. But I think I'm getting the hang of doing the Daily Nationalist. But this show, this is the show. This is the one. This is the one. I don't phone any shows in. It may seem like it, but I don't. I put my best effort and all of them be Daily Nationalist or whatever. But this is the show. This is my focus. I'm glad you're here. If you're a regular member of the congregation, it's great to have you back. If you're a new member of the congregation, thank you for stopping in. I hope you get something out of it and you'll want to come back. That's the whole point. There's nothing behind a paywall here. So what you see is what you get. If you think the show sucks, I don't have anything better on Patreon or anything like that. This is as good as it gets. If you do like it, then hey, that's an awesome deal. You got it for free. But I do ask if you really get something out of it. We do throw something in the plate. I pass the offering plate around. Don't be thumping it. It's easy to do. Look on the description page right here. Just look right there. I've got snail mail. I've got Bitcoin, Monero, email address. You drop your notes in there. I got, if you got a different cryptocurrency, I will take your shit coins. I have no pride at all when it comes to that sort of thing. Shoot me an email. I'll get you an address for that. Nobody ever does. I think y'all don't like the shit coins. That's fine. That's fine. The other works better for me. If you are new, if this is your first time stopping by, we do have a Christian specific segment. See, the name of the show kind of implies that. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. And believe me, when I say roughly, it's roughly. You think that because the show's roughly an hour long, you'd think that means that 30 minutes is going to do that. It might be at 40 minutes or it might be at 10 minutes. It just depends. Depends on how much I use my incredible psychic ability to recognize how long I'm going to go in the second part of the show. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. This is when I get to hear from y'all. I say this, but the listener supporter mailbag is like one of my favorite things to do. The Christian specific segment is my actual real favorite thing. That's the whole point of the show. Second to that is the listener supporter mailbag because I get to hear from you. GPD, sorry for the loose bills. All the 20s and 10s have been sent to Israel. That's from Mr. T. It is. It says a lot, doesn't it? Remember when Trump wanted to do the border wall and he had all these different politicians, Democrats and Republicans. You had Republicans go, I'm a fiscal conservative and I'm against government spending on all levels. And we cannot afford $3 billion for a wall. That's just fiscal. When I was a kid, I used to say physical. I thought it was physical. It's fiscal. See? It's fiscal irresponsibility. I'm a George Will style, you see. I'm a George. I am a George Will conservative. I am of the Bill Buckley school of conservatism, you see. And I am against the frivolous government spending. Now, they all of them like, I want to give $10 billion to Israel. No, $20 billion. That's like 4 days into this whole thing. And Israel's like, we demand $10 billion from the U.S. And got all these politicians falling over each other. That isn't enough. We need to give more billions to Israel. Is pointing that out anti-Semitic? I don't know. It's just observing reality. I don't think it's anti-Semitic. It's just pointing out reality that all of our politicians, this is the way it works. If you say, for instance, AIPAC has a whole lot of influence on our government, you see, that is considered anti-Semitic. But maybe it's not anti-Semitic if you make the observation that all of our politicians from both parties are falling over each other to give more billions to Israel without anybody going, we shouldn't give them anything. They can handle their own business. See, that's different. You're just observing reality. See, I understand how to thread the needle. I'm threading the needle here. The border's wide open. We can't build a wall because we can't afford it because it's throwing money away. But we gotta send some more billions. Gotta send some more billions to Israel. Yes, of course we do. GPD, sending best wishes and prayers for you. Thanks for all you do. God bless. And that's from Nick. No, God bless you. Thank you very much. It is a blessing for me to hear from y'all. For your support is a blessing. That's like a literal blessing. Like right out of the Bible. You're a part of doing something. You're part of doing something godly. You know, it's written in the Bible. It says, you know, if you see somebody hungry and you can give them some food, you give them some food. That's faith. That's a blessing for that person. Y'all are part of, when y'all drop something in the plate, it's a blessing for me. And I thank you very, very much. See, we're 5 minutes in. We're already through the listener supported mailbag. See, it doesn't take that long. I don't spend a lot of time going on. I always say this, always remind me, I never want to be that guy. Like when I was a kid and we'd go to church, parents make you go to church and you'd go in there. And once in a while, the preacher would have an interesting sermon. This was way back in the day before the MCC became so MCC. Once in a while, the preacher would have a decent sermon. And even as a little kid, you'd be like, well, that's kind of interesting. I don't understand it, but it's kind of interesting. But then you would have times you would go in there and the entire sermon, because you always have like that 1 hour service. And the first 20 to 30 minutes is going to be the choir singing, which is just boring. I'm sorry, it's just boring. I don't care. Then the second 30 minutes would be the preacher preaching, you know, this is. And sometimes you go in there and you'd realize in the first like minute and a half that you're going to get 30 minutes of the preacher talking about tithing. And, you know, how God wants you to put more money in the offering plate because church coming up short on their budget. You know, right then, I was a little kid and I knew right then church short on the budget this month. And the preacher's spending the whole 30 minutes going on about preaching about tithing. Tithing, you got to put money in the plate. It's like 30 minutes trapped in a fundraiser. I don't ever do that. If you're new around here, don't worry. I don't ever do that. In fact, as you can see, having some fun with that. I managed to go get my cancer scan the other day. I managed to go get it. I'll get the results when I go see the oncologist later next month. But I did manage to go get my cancer scan. I haven't managed to pay for it yet. Ain't gonna lie. They was like, you know, because I got this crappy $8,700 or whatever dollar Obamacare deductible on here. And I'm still paying on the first one that I had earlier. See, they want me to do this like 3 or 4 times a year. And they get all bent. Oncologist's like, it's your health. And I'm like, yeah, but I can't afford $3,500 a scan. That's how much that costs. He's like, yeah, but this is your health. Well, if you're so worried about my health, you call over there and tell them to drop their price. And I went there and they're like, well, we couldn't get a whole insurance company. We're not sure how they're going to do all this. So we're just going to bill the insurance. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, just hey, send me a bill. You know, whatever they don't pay, send me a bill. We'll get it took care of. And I am. I'm going to pay them. I ain't stiffing them. I ain't like that. But I mean, I ain't going to lie. I know right there they ain't paying nothing because I ain't hit that $8,700 ridiculous deductible. I wouldn't have an $8,700 deductible if we weren't having to spend billions to Israel and the Ukraine. Israel and the Ukraine. More important than my cancer scan. You see, it's all about priorities. But I did get it. I'll show the results when I get them. I always, you know, back and forth with y'all. I go in there and I'm sitting in there. I'm the only one in there. Thank goodness. It's depressing if you go in there and like there's other people in there. I don't like that. Because a lot of times there's other people in there that got, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I've had 2 different cancer surgeries in just over a year. You know, but I mean, there's people in there like, you know, they have got cancer. Like they weigh 90 pounds and they got a stocking cap on their head because they're doing chemo and shit, you know? And I feel bad because I ain't gonna lie. I've been putting some weight on. I'm trying to cut that back. I mean, I ain't fat, but I mean, just like, I know I put some weight on and I'm sitting in there just like, in my view, except for the fact that all my joints are shot, I feel like I'm more or less healthy as a horse. I feel good. And I dang sure look better than them. And I feel like, what the hell am I doing in here? You know, like from their point of view, they're looking at me like, what's this fool doing in here? So there's nobody else in there. So I'm sitting out in the waiting room. See, I'm going somewhere with this story. I'm sitting there in the waiting room. And of course, they always have to have a damn TV on in these places. Why? I don't know. Like, it's going to bother you to sit in silence. It does not bother me to sit in silence. I prefer sitting in silence. I don't want Good Morning America or CBS Mornings or whatever the hell else. I don't want to listen to this. But they did. They had it on. And they had a segment going, and I had to stop because I hear this in the back of my mind. I'm trying to ignore it, but it's going on. And I hear it, and it's just kind of like I made an ear twitch. And so I had to look up here. It was supposed to be another one of these human interest. They're doing their human interest segment. I think this is on CBS News. And this guy sits with his kids, and they talk about how to be good people. Like, I need to be lectured to by a child, which is insulting on its face. That's why I try to ignore these things. But what they were talking about twitched my ear. So they're doing this story with this guy's kids. And it's not about the guy's kids. This is the reporter guy, and he uses his kids as stage props for this segment because that's a very moral thing to do, apparently. And they're doing this segment about, they're talking about humanity. Humanity. So they wind up, he goes off and does a story, and it's about this woman. And why she used to be the type that would just walk past the homeless. She would walk past the homeless and think they should go get a job. And they're asking her, yes, I used to go by and think they should just get a job. It's an older woman. I should just go by and get a job. They should just go by. They should. What are they doing? And yep, one day she had an epiphany. She had a revelation. Long story short, she used to pass by this homeless guy who happens, this homeless black man. And one day she got to talking to him. She got to talking to this homeless black man. And one day she looks at him. She's telling this story. And she looks at this homeless black man one day. And she says, how would you like to come live in my house? I said, I kid you not. How would you like to come live in my house? Would you just come move in with me? And then they flip over in the segment and they ask the husband. And they go, how did that go? Well, she says, one day out of the blue, my wife calls me up and she says, I want to let this guy move in with us. And at first I was kind of like, you know, I'm just sitting there, you know, if you've seen the meme, you know, that the chair in the motel room, you know, with the heading the cuck chair, you know. And at first I was like, but I know how she is when she sets her mind to something. So I finally said, okay, honey, whatever you want to do, this guy agrees to this. I ain't being racist. But I mean, imagine you've been married for however long, got kids, grown kids, whatever. Your wife calls you up out of the blue and says, I want to invite a homeless person into the house. And you imagine you sitting there and go, sure, babe, whatever you want to do. What world? It's like I live among aliens. What world do these people come from? I'm going to have a homeless guy come move in with us. Sure, great idea, baby. What could go wrong? I wouldn't question the queen's judgment. So anyway, they kind of skimmed through the rest of the story, getting him back on his feet, blah, blah, blah. He's still living there, by the way. But he does have some kind of little old job or something he's doing somewhere. But he's living with him. His mother invites the homeless man. She invites this homeless black man. And you know, and you say, why are you pointing out black man? You say you're not being racial, but you know, let's be honest. Because I'm sitting there the whole time thinking, you know what she's getting here? She moving in. This is a family-friendly show, and I will keep it family-friendly. But you know what you're thinking. You sitting there, Nanya, you know what I'm saying. Because I know, the husband's sitting there going, hey, okay, I'm moving this random black guy into our house. You okay with that, baby? Yeah, let me move my cuck chair over here and sit and watch. That's basically what you're doing. He's going to be off at work. He off at work paying the bills. See, she's going the route to where she ain't like blowing up the family. And then she has to go off and try to figure out how now all of a sudden at her mature age, she's going to make a living off. No, she's going to keep it to where he's still paying for everything. And she got my impression. This is my theory. But my impression and anybody's impression looking at this situation with any common sense is going to be when she got recreational, you know what? And just to put this in perspective, of course, the media story is framing this as what a wonderful thing. I'm thinking, what a humiliating thing. I can't tell you. I just can't tell you what my response would be. If I was in that guy's shoes, no. Would just be the most simple thing. That would just be the beginning of what else would get said. And before you sit here and say, oh, GBD, well, y'all aren't, because y'all on the same page as me. But before one would say, GBD, you're being totally, totally, totally unreasonable. She's just helping somebody. Okay, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say this old bag is sitting at home and her husband calls her up and says, you know what, baby, you know how me and you, we both stand with Ukraine and we think it's horrible, you know, what's happened to the Ukrainian people. And she'd be like, yeah, yeah, baby, we stand with Ukraine. We got the blue and yellow flag hanging off the porch, a whole nine yards. He said, well, I've been talking to this 28-year-old Ukrainian woman and, you know, she has fled the Russian aggression against the Ukraine and she's fled to the U.S. She needs some help getting on her feet. I'm going to go ahead and move this 28-year-old Ukrainian beauty into our house. Is that A-OK? That bitch be coming unglued. Ain't no way this old bag would be just lose her shit. You know she would. And the neighbors, they wouldn't be doing no human interest story about this guy's generosity. Or the neighbor, the church, everybody would be saying, you know what this guy's doing. How dare you? How dare you move in a young, attractive Ukrainian woman into the house? Oh, get your minds out of the gutter. What do you mean? You're just assuming that's what he's looking for? Maybe he wants to be really, help her out because he really, you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is for helping the Ukraine. The rest of you just putting a Twitter profile with a flag. He's putting his mouth in helping the Ukrainian people. No, y'all would be all, everybody, y'all. Everybody would be like, no, he's trying to get some of that. No, his wife would just blow up. Tell him he's out of his mind. And she moving some random black man in the house. And everybody, she getting a human interest story about what a good, on lecturing us on humanity about what a good person she is by moving this random black dude into the house. It's funny because I talk about this. And the only people who would be offended at this and say I'm saying something mean or bad would be like white, quote unquote, anti-racist. But you're just being racist. There ain't nothing racist about it. We're just talking about the situation. I guarantee you, if I was talking about this situation, if a black person is listening, they might be. But if a black person hears this story, they're going to be sitting there going, uh-huh, we know what she up to. We know, oh, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, you just helping the homeless, right? Mm-hmm. They know the same thing. They're just talking about what's obvious. Just like if the husband was moving in an attractive young Ukrainian woman, you'd be like, he's standing with the Ukraine. He's standing something else. You know what I'm saying? I just can't imagine. I can't imagine a world where you just sit there, your wife calls you up. A lot of you guys listening, y'all married men. You imagine? Close your eyes and imagine your wife calls you out of the blue and says, I'm moving this black homeless man into our house. Is that okay, baby? Can you imagine when you say, sure, hon? You'd probably be like, look, if you want to go off and do that on your own. I ain't paying for it. You can go get you a place of your own and strike out as a new independent woman when you're 60 years old or whatever the hell you are. Crazy. And of course, then there's the media thing, you know, setting all of that aside for the moment, because there's many aspects to this thing. It was like I was being tortured sitting here waiting. And it's bad enough because, you know, you go to the cancer scan and they inject you with this radioactive crap. I don't know what it is, but I know that they put the syringe inside of like this metal case because they don't want to be exposed to it. And they shooting that shit in my veins. And you wonder, what is it going to do to me? This is probably going to give me cancer. This is probably part of the scam. They give you this stuff to give you more cancer so they can make more money. And then they put you in the tube. And you're in the tube. And some people are claustrophobic. It doesn't. I actually find it cozy in the tube. The part I don't find cozy is that little table is uncomfortable as hell and kills my back. You know, some people freak out in the machines because you're real close in space. But I find it cozy. I feel nice and cozy. It's safe in there. But nonetheless, I'm being tortured. That's not torture enough. I'm being tortured in the waiting room listening to this ridiculous story. Setting all of what we talked about aside for the moment, what's the other aspect of this is the media is promoting this as this great thing. The media is telling morons, because you'd have to be a moron not to see all of the pitfalls involved here, okay? The media is telling people that if you really care about people, if you really want to help people, if you really want to be a good person and show your humanity and get maybe someday virtue signal points by getting your own segment on CBS News, you should go out and invite random homeless people into your home. In what world would that be a good? I mean, these people have problems. I'm about helping. Look, I'm not a heartless person. I am. I'm not hard. When I stop somewhere and one of these, you know, I'm at an intersection and one of these people is standing there like all strung out on meth holding their cardboard sign, I mean, I don't give them nothing because I ain't interacting with them. But I do feel sorry for them. You might be saying, well, see, you ain't doing nothing to help. Well, that's, yeah, because I'm not going to interact with those people. Because what you will find out, and y'all know, what you find out the minute you start interacting with the 99.99% of these people are either A, strung the hell out on drugs, or B, insane, literally insane. Don't want to start interacting with crazy people. That's a reality. That's reality. By the way, if you get background noise, it's raining this morning when I'm recording this. So if you hear weird stuff in the background, it's what it is. I'm not going to interact with these people because they're crazy and a lot of them are strung out on drugs. That's a reality. But yet the media is telling people that it's a great thing and you're a good person if you invite random homeless people into your house. And the vast majority of these cases is not going to turn out well. I mean, it's not. It's like that story we did on the Daily Nationalist several weeks ago, you know, where the woman let the black guy into her. She opened the door, let him into the apartment building. And then they found her with her clothes half off and her head bashed in and dead up on the roof. You know, she unlocked the door, let the guy into the complex. Because, you know, to not do so, to question it would be a racist and that would be awful. Instead of saying, well, if this guy belongs in here, he would have a key. And if he forgot his key, he can call management and they'll come down and buzz him in. I don't got to get up and open the damn door. But see, to do that would be racist. She was one of these anti-racist social justice people. And she was living. She was walking the walk for about another 10 minutes after that. And then she wasn't walking no more because she got her head bashed in and she dead. I'm being cruel, but that's life. You go around, they're telling these people, and there's going to be a segment of the population that is that damn stupid. They're going to see that and go, you know what? I pass this homeless guy on the street every day. I'm going to invite him in my house. Sure, that'll work out well. We've read stories where, like in Europe, you know, they're letting all these migrants in from Africa. They don't know anything about these people. And you'll have, once in a while, you've seen the stories. And somebody, some couple will be like, we're going to invite these people into our house. And then they all shocked when they stabbed them. They got stabbed. Their whole family stabbed. Their whole family dead because they tried a virtue signal about letting some stranger in their house. Christian people fall for that dumb shit. They do. They think that you're supposed to let random people. They read the fictional story that Jesus told. He just told it as a metaphor to make a point about something completely different. But he told the story about the Good Samaritan, and people think that means they're supposed to let random people in their house. Even in the illustration that Jesus used, you know, the Samaritan didn't take the guy to his house. He paid for a spot for him at the inn because he had the money. He didn't take him home and say, here, live with my wife. That would be ridiculous. Christian people be falling for that. They hear that and say, yeah, I'm going to invite these African refugees into my house. What your first and foremost duty is to protect your family. You're supposed to watch after your family. If you can't watch after and protect your immediate family, you can't watch after, help, and protect anybody else. You got to start with the basics. If you ain't protecting your family, you say, no, y'all ain't coming into my house. Well, why? I thought you was a good Christian person. I am a good Christian person. That's why I'm starting off by taking care of my family. That's my first duty. If I can't take care of my family, I can't take care of anybody else. If I can't help my family and watch out of my family using the brain that God gave me and some common sense, then I ain't going to help nobody else. And worship the virtue signal, not worshiping the virtue signal. It just amazes me. Shouldn't. It just amazes me, though, that the media will put out a story like that. We're like, no responsibility, you know? We talk about, like, nationalists in general, just generally speaking, nationalists talk about reality itself. And they criticize and say, by talking about reality, you're encouraging people to do some sort of violence or something, which is just absurd. I don't know of any real nationalists that do that. But they use a stretched logic to say you're encouraging people. You're endangering people with your words. You know, they always say, you know, like words are violence or something. You know, disagreeing with the left is equivalent to terrorism and violence. Which, of course, again, it's nonsensical on his face. But they claim that your words, if they could somehow tie somebody who goes off and does something to your words, then you bear responsibility just like you did it, which, again, is stupid. And yet they themselves, the media goes out here and does a story like this, openly telling people you're a good person if you invite the homeless into your house. That will make you a good person. Now, granted, most people are not going to do that. But there is a certain segment. Again, you're going to have a certain segment of weird people that might hear that and think, yeah, that is a good idea. And they're going to invite the homeless in their house and bad things are going to happen. By their own logic, then, would the media not be responsible for whatever happened to those people? Trying to be a good person, like the media says you are. By inviting the homeless. No, they're not responsible for that. Of course, we know it's because they don't actually believe any of this crap. This is just the agenda at work here. To pay it no mind. You can't try to read like they have principles or believe any of this bullshit. You know, I understand that, but still it bears, the truth should be pointed out. The truth should be pointed out. It always bears pointing these things out. It is, though, you know, I mean, look, people responsible. You know, I'm a big believer that people are responsible for themselves. Like, if you're so damn stupid that you would hear a story like that and go out and invite the homeless in your house and get stabbed, I mean, sad you get stabbed, especially like if you got kids that had no say in it and they get stabbed. You know, that's bad for those kids, for your kids, because you're stupid. But I do. I mean, I ain't sitting here and saying it's the media's fault. I mean, if you're stupid enough to listen to a story like that and not see all the red flags and how stupid it is, and you think that's a good idea, that's on you for being stupid. But it is crazy to me. It is crazy they come out with stuff like that and tell people, try to encourage people, because that's what they're doing. They're trying to encourage people to do self-destructive things like that. You know, I don't encourage anybody to do self-destructive things. Y'all listen to the show. What did I say we're at here? I'm looking over here at my tab. 243 times I've done the show, and I can assure you, I mean, if you could sit and listen to all 243 episodes, I can with 100% certainty say I've never encouraged anybody to do anything self-destructive or harmful to other people. I've not, because that's not what I do. That's not what I believe in. I mean, I don't encourage. Everything I do on this show is to get people to do things that are constructive, that are better for themselves. It's about bettering yourself and maybe bettering the world around you, which helps other people. That's what I do. I can guarantee you, 243 plus hours of doing this, you're not going to find me telling people to go do something self-destructive. You know, you would have to like flip everything upside down and close one eye and try to construe something in that, you know, into being something that is not, come up with that conclusion, because I just don't do that. It's not what I intend to do. That there's no purpose in that. And yet, in a story like this, the media, network media, broadcasting on TV, not a podcast, they're openly encouraging people to do something that's bad for them. You know, setting all the rest of it aside, inviting random homeless people into your house is a bad idea. I don't care who you are or how you cut it. That's a bad idea. And the vast majority of the time, like 99.99999% of the time, that is not going to turn out well. Hell, it's not going to turn out well inviting any strangers into your house, period. Damn sure not ones that you know, they probably have mental illness and drug problems. This is just a bad idea. And yet they're openly encouraging people to do that. And of course, they get a free pass because it's them. Anyway, don't invite the homeless into your house. If you feel compelled to help homeless people, just help them. You know, give money to a shelter. If you want to give them money out your window at the stop sign, you know, whatever, that's on you. I say, I don't do that because I don't want to interact with crazy people. You know, I don't want to wave somebody that's probably strung out on some kind of drugs that I don't even know exists. I'm not going to wave them over here so I can interact with them. You know, I'm not going to do that. It's me. But if you want to do that, if you want to directly help the homeless, that's better to do that than to say, come live with me. Now, if it's 28-year-old Ukrainian woman, that might be a different story. We got to wrap up on this note. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. I just blew it all up. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment. We got my sulky community is telling me we're going to run long today. Bear with me because it's all going to be good. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I was thinking the other day about the way we have these discussions in the Christian specific segment and the way we go about it and why I think it's important. Because what I strive to do here is to try to kind of just get into the nuts and bolts of the faith. You know, really, that's what we do when we have these discussions. And I say we, obviously, it's just me talking, but I do include all of y'all. If there was nobody listening, I've said this so many times before, but I mean, y'all, I don't consider y'all like a passive part of what's going on here. Y'all are very much a part. If nobody was listening, this would be absolutely pointless. So y'all, I consider, when I say we, it's because I consider y'all very much, there has to be two parties. You can't have a discussion if one person's talking alone in a room. There has to be somebody to hear. And of course, when I hear from y'all in the listener supporter mailbag, that provides even further back and forth. So I always do consider y'all every bit of much part of the show as what me sitting here, you know, discussing these things. But what we do here is we get into the nuts and bolts, and that's, you know, the practicality. And I've always said that the point of the Christian specific segment, what we do here, is for Christian believers. That's why I tell everyone, that's why I have it in a certain part of the show, because this is for Christian believers. Now, I don't care if non-believers want to listen. In fact, that's good for you. I'm glad you are if you choose to do that. But I do set it separate because there's people who just are so dead set against any sort of religion, especially Christianity, for whatever reasons, that they just absolutely positively don't want to hear it. And I mean, I get that. No, I do. I understand that there's people like, I'll read through anime comments. I'll be like on the anime site and reading comments on an anime episode, and you'll have somebody randomly come in there and start posting John 3:16 in there, and it's like, dude, that's cringe. You know, it has nothing to do with what's being discussed here. It's just completely out of place, and that's off-putting to people. You know, it's off-putting to people. They don't want to hear it. And that's why I do. I put it in its special spot. If non-believers want to listen, then that's great. If they don't, they know, well, I announce when we're coming into this segment, they have every option, so don't be coming at me like, I just hate that. Well, you don't have to listen. I even put it in some separate place. We don't preach here in the first part of the show. You can listen to my very great insights. My wonderful insights on the first part of the show, as wonderful or not as those may be. But I do. We get into the nuts and bolts of the faith. You know, what's involved. And, you know, I've been to the MCC. Granted, it's been decades now, but I have been to the MCC. So I don't speak of that which I am unfamiliar with. And that is, I remember, you know, that the MCC is just, I mean, they really don't get into the nuts and bolts. I mean, they're always about half an inch deep, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, you can wade through it without getting the tops of your shoes wet. That's always been my impression. They really don't. There's always this infamous. There's always this emphasis. More coffee. I need more coffee this morning. There's always this emphasis on accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and always seems like there's very little emphasis on what that means. And really, I think that sells people short. It sells earnest Christian believers short because they're kind of left out there on their own, you know, to try to figure it out on their own. And people don't have time for that. I mean, that's honest to goodness truth. God has blessed me at this current time of my life that I'm able to set time aside pretty much every morning and spend sometimes hours, just depending on how things roll, you know, praying and in faith and reading the Bible and trying to understand the world around me. And God has blessed me with that. And I understand that that's a blessing. I mean, the exchange of it is basically I live poor. But, you know, that is a blessing for me. And I also very much understand how important that is. And along with that, I understand that the vast majority of people, the vast majority of you don't have time for that. You're going to work. You're raising kids. You've got things going on. And you just literally don't have time. I mean, it's just the way the world works. So those who are able to do that, we should share it with you. And that's what I attempt to do here, is I attempt to share, I pray, and when I feel like the Lord has kind of shown me something, I've been blessed with understanding something, I share it with you because I get that y'all don't have the time for that. So it's on me to share it. I understand that it's not on me to make y'all accept, understand it or whatever. I just have to share the information. And that's the way it always works in the Bible. God would tell the prophets, y'all tell them this. He never told them, it's your job to convince them. Same when Jesus walked this earth. He never spent a bunch of time trying to convince people. He just explained things to them and went on. If they accepted it, they did. And if not, so be it. But understanding the faith and what we follow, we really have to understand how it works. And I was thinking about this also in the context of people on the outside looking in. For the non-believer who listens in, who sits in and listens to this segment of the show or whatever, or maybe, I don't know, turns on some mega MCC, super MCC on the TV, whatever. You know, they take that in. I mean, even if somebody does, if you listen to the Christian specific segment and you're a non-believer, I mean, even if you're not convinced, and again, I don't care. I've always... But if you listen and it's still not for you or whatever, but you just listen for the entertainment factor or whatever, you can at least understand where those of us who do believe this, you know, where we're going and how it actually works and functions, besides just, you know, a bunch of shallow talk about love and quote unquote accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior without very much emphasis or explanation on what all that entails. You know, just that's not convincing. It's just empty rhetoric. And we do. My goal here is we want to be into the nuts and bolts and talk about what that means and understanding the world around us. And I think it's important. And again, for those who are currently non-believers, at least if they hear it, maybe they hear how all of this works. You know, it might bring them into the faith because that makes sense. You just hear a bunch of empty talk about forgiveness, love, Jesus, and all that without any explanation. It doesn't help very, you know, very much. I mean, as such, as Christian believers, you know, we're always overcoming our fallen nature. We're always struggling against the sinful nature. And you know, that's a part. We'll be doing that until we leave these mortal bodies, which is what keeps us bound to this temporal realm. You know, we're always going to be working against that. People will often like say, you know, basically accuse Christians. If they catch a Christian believer doing something that they shouldn't, they like to point and accuse. And I always find that ironic when non-believers do that. You know, they reject the faith altogether, but then they're always the first ones to run up and point and say, ha, you're screwing up. That's not very Christian of you, is it? It's like, you know, shut the hell up. It's like you're pointing at somebody got a spot of mud on their shoe and you just head to toe wallowing in it like a pig. Don't be coming at me with that. But we are. I mean, we understand it and we're always struggling to overcome sin and to improve ourselves. And I was thinking about the struggle because I think a lot of people do. You spend a lot of time, you know, levels of focus on overcoming sin in your life and trying to do better. Always trying to do better. And I was thinking about what this struggle against sin looks like. Because the benefits of getting older is you've got more experience and you understand. The younger you are, you're trying to figure it out. This goes back to the whole sharing information to hopefully help other people out. I was thinking about the struggle against sin. And as long as your struggle against sin is in the realm of, and I'm talking about a specific sin, whatever you're struggling with in your life, that you're focused on, we're always going to say, I mean, there's just, you know, through our normal day, there's always going to be things we do that we probably shouldn't. I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. You know, there'll be something that's what you're focused on. You want to get rid of that part out of your life. And I was thinking about, you know, how that works. And I was thinking about different sinful things that I have successfully, God has blessed me with overcoming in my life. And it occurred to me that as long as your struggle against sin is in the context of this, you know, I'm going to quit doing this, I'm going to stop doing this, and this time, that was the last time I'm doing that. I'm not doing that again. I'm going to do better next time. As long as it's in that framework, you're probably not ready yet. You're probably not going to overcome it. I tell you this so that you don't get discouraged, because it can be discouraging. You're bound and determined. You say, I'm not going to do it. This is the time. This is the time. That was it. That's the last time. I'm never going to do it again. And then what will happen is a little time rolls by and then you do it again and you get frustrated and angry with yourself. And you're like, why did I do that? Again, I said I wasn't going to do that. And what happens is you repeat that cycle. And then in your mind, it becomes inevitable. It's like, well, why do I struggle against it? Because I wind up doing it again anyway. I mean, I've said, told myself 15 times, 100 times, however many times that I'm not going to do that again. And then I turn around and I do it again. Don't be discouraged. If you read your Bible, Paul talks about the exact same struggle when he says, those things which I don't want to do, these I keep on doing. I know what I want to do and I struggle to do that. And yet I don't do those things. The things I don't want to do, this I keep on doing. This is normal. Don't get down on yourself. I've learned, it has occurred to me, and I've learned over the years, as long as your struggle against sin is in the context of, I'm not going to do this anymore. This time I'm going to have enough strength and self-control. I'm not going to do this anymore. You're probably going to fail. Doesn't mean it's not worth the struggle, but you probably aren't there yet as far as overcoming sin. Doesn't mean you can't overcome it. I'm just saying you're not there yet. My experience with these things has been, you overcome sin when you simply quit wanting to do it. You see, under that frame, under the first framework of I'm going to quit doing it this time, that was the last time. Well, the reason you keep going back and doing it is because on whatever level, you know, in your sinful nature, you still want to do those things. This is the struggle between the spiritual nature and the sinful nature that Paul talked about. You know what you want to do, you know what you should do, and you're trying to do that, but you keep doing sin. You keep doing that other thing, and you have this back and forth going all the time. When you overcome sin is when you finally overcome the desire to do that thing, whatever that thing is. When you get to a point where you just wake up one day and you think about that sin and you realize you haven't done that in a long time without really any thought. It's like, wait, what happened to that? And you realize that it quit being a temptation. In other words, you quit having to do the back and forth tug of war, because at one point in time, you got to a point to where you just quit wanting to do that. How did that happen? I'm going to give you a secret here. I'm going to share a bit of knowledge. I do. I think this is a bit of knowledge that would be very, very helpful for you. If you're struggling against something in that context, quit focusing on that. I don't mean, well, just la, 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 la through your life then and just hope that it fixes itself. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying work on other things. You know, work on improving yourself in other areas. There's always, you know, spiritual growth you can be making. As long as you're just focused on that thing, you're giving it power. And as long as you stay in that context of, my struggle is I've got to quit doing this, then you've made whatever this is the center of attention for you. You know, that is now the center of attention, and that gives it power. It makes it a more powerful thing in your life. It becomes this looming thing. If you turn your back on it and say, okay, well, instead of working on that, I'm going to focus on, you know, gaining understanding in the Lord, I don't know, working on how I carry myself, working on how I speak to other people, working on, I'm trying to think of a good example and I haven't hit it yet, working on my self-control in other areas of my life. Say you have a problem, just an example. Say you have a problem with anger getting a hold of you and you blow up. That's a reflection, if you think about it, that's a reflection of a lack of self-control in those instances, of letting emotion take over you. So instead of just focusing on that, and then when inevitably somebody pisses you off and you're blowing up and now you're trying to have this struggle and you're grinding your teeth, instead, look at the other areas where you're allowing emotion to push you around. Maybe it's not to that extent. Work on your self-control and say, okay, how can I be closer to Jesus in the way I don't allow emotionalism to influence my decisions? I mean, we're all going to be emotional. That's a part of who we are. But there's a difference between having emotions and allowing emotions to control your decisions. Work on, getting in the habit of making decisions when you're not being moved around by emotion. In other words, now you're not focused on anger. In our illustration here, now you're just focused on self-control and not allowing outside influences to manipulate you and have control over you by working on your emotions. I'm talking about your other emotions besides anger. And what you'll find is, as you do that, then that influences that thing you were struggling against, in our illustration here, anger. And next thing you know, that becomes less powerful. And taking on a long enough road, you wake up one day and that doesn't affect you anymore. And you're like, how did that even happen? And it's no longer struggle. It's no longer struggle because you no longer want to do it. I'm just going to use myself as an example. I'm going to share with y'all. I'm going to use myself for an example. When I was a young man, which seems like forever ago, and yet at the same time, oddly enough, seems as though it was yesterday. When you get older, you'll understand what I mean by that. You can look at the past and be like, man, that's ages ago. And at the same time, it seems like it was yesterday. It seems like a contradiction. It's not. Like I said, you'll understand as you get older. But when I was a young man, I could drink like a fish. I ain't gonna lie. I drink like a fish, pretty common stuff with young guys. You know, you run around with your friends or whatnot. Things are a little different now. But back in those days, you know, you ran around with your friends and you went places, you did stuff. And I mean, it was just a common thing that everybody was drinking. I drink like a fish. I drink with the best of them. I drink with the best of them. And of course, as I got older, you know, that tended to kind of taper off. And now I can tell you at 56 years old now, you know, I don't know when the last time I drank was. You know, I still have a partial bottle of Jim Beam whiskey sitting up there that hasn't been touched. Everybody laughs about it like, why is that still sitting up there? I'm always like, it's okay, because whiskey doesn't go bad. See, it gets better with age. I'm just aging it out. Truth is, I probably won't ever drink it. It's probably just going to sit there like a memento, you know, like a souvenir. But the point is, you know, it's not that, like, you know, if I'm around somebody that's drinking, I'm going, oh, look at you, you're drinking. Oh, see, I'm above that. It's not that at all. It's just like, you know, because people will be like, you know, hey, you want me to order you a beer? And I'm like, nah, I'm good. And it's not like, you know, oh, I have this thing against drinking. It's just that I don't feel like it, you know. And people ask me, they'll be like, how come you don't drink nothing anymore? You know, just out of curiosity, how come you? And it's not like, because Jesus has revealed to me, I've turned away from the demon of alcohol. No, it's just like, I don't feel like it. I literally just don't feel like it. When I was a young man, I could put away some whiskey now. But I was just like, well, no, I mean, it's not like that. I don't feel like it. I'm simply not drinking because I don't feel like it. See, this is how you overcome. When you get to that point to where it's no longer, I'm wrestling with this thing. When you get to this point of, well, I just don't feel like it. It's no longer a temptation and it's lost its power over you. And that's where you got to get. And again, I didn't get to that point, say, with the example of drinking. I never got to that point because to me, in my mind, it was never really a big deal. You just get to that point because as you work on these other things in your life, which obviously we're doing that here, as you work on these other things and improving and spiritually maturing, well, you know, you just have less time for that. And as you improve in these other segments of your life, it winds up affecting this over here. And you basically wind up killing this thing off without even trying to. You're working on these other things. And as those other things grow stronger, as your spiritual development grows stronger, it winds up choking that out. And you never had to do the tug of war. You never went through the tug of war with it at all. Now, obviously, you know, you may have things you're tug of warring with now. And I'm telling you, the secret to overcoming those, quit focusing on that so much. Quit making a big deal out of it. Take advantage of the fact that you are under grace, under Jesus Christ. Because of Jesus Christ, you are under the grace system. Take advantage of that to focus on maturing spiritually in these other areas of your life. And it will eventually choke that out. As long as you keep giving it power by making it the center and you're gauging where you're at as a Christian believer on whether or not you quit doing that, you're making it into a monster and you are the one feeding it and making it powerful. Push that to the side and focus on growing. Focus on growing in these other areas of life. Focus on your self-control, the way you look at other people, the way you talk to other people, the way you conduct yourself, the way you understand the Lord and how much time you spend focusing on understanding God through the world around you and so on and so forth. And what you do is you start choking that thing out. Now you're not giving it power. And this is the way you overcome these things. Now, I'm telling you, As long as your struggle has been, you have constructed the struggle into the context of, I've got to stop doing this. And as long as that is your focus, you're not going to win. You can, I can guarantee you're going to keep going back to it. You are. It's going to keep kicking you in the ass because you will get this mindset of there's no point in the struggle. You might go a day and be like, I'm so glad I didn't do that today. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, what about tomorrow? And even tomorrow, what about next week? Because you've developed this mindset that's inevitable. It's inevitable that you're going to do that thing. Quit looking at it. You're under grace. Focus on your spiritual maturity because let me tell you, that's why you're here. That is, that's why you're here. It's your purpose in life. You know, the purpose of life. You know, that's everybody, even non-believers, at the end of the day, everybody is struggling with, why am I here? What is the point of this? I always laugh, you know, when some unbeliever, and by being saying unbeliever, I'm being generous. Usually I'm talking about atheist Spurgs. They was, because that's a whole different thing. Y'all know. That's a whole different thing. An unbeliever, you know, somebody just doesn't believe and then they think that's not for them or whatever. And that's fine. That's whatever. You know, there's a difference between somebody who's just an unbeliever, just doesn't believe, and somebody who's an atheist Spurg. Atheist Spurgs are always hostile towards the truth or hostile towards Christianity. But, you know, I always laugh, you know, when some atheist Spurg will sit there, you know, and mock and be like, oh, y'all believe in these fairy tales. That's right. Oh, yes. God parted the sea. Sure, he did. Oh, sure. He did. Oh, we talked to him through a burning bush. That's totally believable. Oh, you people are so stupid. Believing in your little fantasies, really? A burning bush? Sure he did. Resurrected from the dead and born of a virgin. Oh, yeah. Show me the science. Show me the evidence for that. These are the same people that look at this world around them, which works in perfect balance. It works in perfect balance. And they say this just happened by circumstances. Where did you come from? What is your purpose in life? Oh, well, you see, all this was created at random and just by pure happenstance, you know, the earth just happened to be created to with this perfect balance to sustain life. Well, where did the life come from? Well, you see, this goo was formed. There was this goo and the goo formed and the goo just so happened to have these elements to make DNA and the DNA happened to go together and they made these single cell organisms and they eventually over enough time, you see, the organism just grew legs and they became a fish. And then the fish grew legs and came out. And eventually, after growing legs, they became monkeys. And then after they became... And you're going to laugh at me and say my stuff about burning bush? You can tell me a burning bush is childish? And this is what you're telling me? This is your answer to why you're here? You know, you look at the world works in perfect harmony. I'm talking about not the world in the sense of mankind. I'm talking about the world, the creation. Nature. I think that's where some of this climate change gibberish, the people that believe in this stupid climate change gibberish. Let me be specific here. I'm sorry. Man-made climate change gibberish. I think that's where some of their evangelism comes from that because on some level, instinctual level, spiritual level, they recognize that the world works in the world works way too well to be such a complicated thing. So they try to create this false narrative, this lie, that you see, the earth actually doesn't work in perfect balance. You see, actually the earth is fragile. And see, we ourselves, men, we could just destroy the planet by living and eating cow meat. You see, they have to create this narrative that the earth actually doesn't function and isn't self-correcting, isn't self-healing, and doesn't work. Somehow it has managed to function for all these many centuries, thousands and many millennia. But you see, that's not right. Because we drive cars, we're suddenly destroying the planet. They have to create this new narrative, this narrative to where actually these things aren't functioning in this complicated, mathematically balanced way. They have to create that to try to justify in their minds the fact that you look around at how the earth functions. We breathe oxygen. We exhale carbon dioxide. Plants inhale carbon dioxide and exhale oxygen. That's a handy system, isn't it? It just so happens to work. By pure chance, it was pure chance. And see, we're going to destroy the pure chance by existing. At the end of the day, everybody has a spiritual drive. Every man has the question in the back of their mind, why am I here? What is the point of this? People have rejected God. They've rejected the faith. And now you have all these people doing unhinged things. I don't mean the extreme examples of somebody going out and shooting up a shopping mall. That's an extreme example. You can see people, especially if you live in an urban environment or you go drive in an urban environment or you're around people on any way, shape, or form, you know, any level. You see people behaving in an unhinged manner. Now, if you're younger, this has become somewhat normalized for you. For those of us with a few years on us, we remember when people weren't this unhinged. Road rage used to not exist. Did you know that? Back in the day, there was no such thing as road rage. People rejected the faith. They rejected God. And yet they have this spiritual desire to understand why they're here. And if you've rejected the faith, then the answer is there's no reason. This is all pointless. You know, if everything's pointless and there's no reason why you're here, then this means pretty much every man for himself and anything goes and get yours or whatever. And it doesn't answer. Even if you went out and said, I reject all that and my reason, but just get as much stuff as I can, and then I die. And then nothing exists anymore. And even if you were, say, successful at that, at chasing worldly things and gaining a lot of wealth, you wind up ultimately, there's still no satisfaction. There's still no satisfaction in that because it doesn't answer that spiritual need, that spiritual desire. It doesn't answer the spiritual question of why am I here? What is the point? Why am I existing in this world? You know, people run, I mean, this world is hardship and suffering and trouble. Why am I even going through this? And I understand why people are losing it. I understand why people are taking meds, ridiculous meds, trying to battle, quote unquote, depression. Of course they're depressed. They have no wonder. Life is struggle. Life is suffering. Life is trouble and tribulation. And they have no idea why they're here. Who wants to go through a bunch of crap if there's no meaning to it? You don't mind going through something if there's something at the other side of it. Otherwise, what's the point? If you truly believe there's no meaning in this life and you're going through a hard patch and you're having problems with other people, whatever the case may be, then if there's no meaning, if there's no greater meaning to it, then why go on with the charade? You know, why go on with it? The faith answers the question. The truth is we're here for a purpose. I am currently hung up on this illustration, because I always say God, it reveals things to himself. One of the things about being in this temporal realm is we look at the world around us and we look at our own lives and other people's lives and we look at how things function, the creation. This is one of the reasons too Satan has convinced people to reject the divinity, but that's probably not the correct word, just the holy signature of God on the creation of how things work. Because things work intricately together. And when you understand the world around us, God gives us insight into him. If you look at a work of art, I'm talking about a real work of art. If you look at a work of art, it will tell you besides what it's conveying, you can understand something about the artist. You know, if you read, I don't know, a novel. If you read the novel, besides the story, you can kind of understand on a certain level the mindset of the author. If you look at a painting, it conveys something to you. You look at this modern art stuff, you know, and you're like, that guy's crazy. That guy got mental issues. He probably got demons floating around in his head talking to him all the time, looking at this crazy stuff. It tells you something. This world teaches us where there's things about life itself that teaches us about God. I'm hung up on this illustration of understanding birth, life, and death as this transient thing, as understanding God through that. Hey, you know, you think about a baby, and I've probably said this before, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it again because I do, I find it so interesting. You have a baby, and he's, this baby is happy. We always look at it, and baby is born, and we all celebrate, and we say, oh, thank you, we have a healthy baby born. This is a good thing. This baby was born, and everybody celebrates that as a good thing. But if you look at it from the perspective, the baby ain't no good thing. Baby was happy, content, floating around in the womb. Don't have no troubles. There may be things going on outside the other side of mama's belly, but they don't care about that. They don't know nothing about that. They floating around in the womb. Nice and warm. They don't got to eat. They don't got to worry about when they go to bed. They don't got to worry about how to make a living. They don't have to worry about none of that. They're floating around, happy and content in the womb. And then one day, against their will, baby doesn't get no say, because if the baby had to say, the baby would be like, I'm going to stay right in here. I won't go out in that scary world. But one day, against their will, the water breaks and the baby is violently shoved out into the world. Again, imagine, you know, I always have sympathy for women. You're going to fit that out of there? But imagine from the baby. Baby got their head pointed and they're being shoved. And the baby like, I ain't going to fit through there. And they're being pushed anyway. Baby like, you're going to mash my head. Against their will, the baby is violently shoved out into this world. And all of a sudden, instead of the warm comfort of the womb, the baby experiences cold reality. New feelings against their skin. Bright lights. Where's this bright light coming from? The reason babies come out and start crying is like, what the hell did you just do to me? And the baby is born into the troubles and tribulations of this world. We celebrate it. A healthy baby is born. But the fact is that baby has now gone from the comfort and safety of the womb. That baby is now born from this moment on will know the trials, troubles, and tribulations of this world. Baby is born into the troubles and tribulations of this world. And you live your life. And when you understand that this life is just like that, you just moved from one womb. The way I say it, you moved from one womb to another womb now. You see, the first womb, when you're in your mama's belly, that's your physical growth so that you can be born into this world. You have to have a physical body for your spirit, for your soul to be contained in, to enter you into the temporal realm. This is what, this body is what keeps you here. I always say eternity, the eternal realm, the realm of the kingdom of God, is not way off up in the skies. I mean, they're all around you. The only thing separating you from it is this skin. You can't, I say this, I'm like, you can see, I'm touching my skin here. It's the skin. This body is what keeps you bound to the temporal realm. This is the barrier, just like only thing keeping that baby from the outside world is his mom. That big push up, you know, because like when a woman's big pregnant, she'll be like, look, you can feel the baby, and you feel that baby pushing its hand going, what's on the other side? Likewise, it's just your skin. It's this body that keeps you in the temporal realm. You get born from your mama's womb, which grows your physical body, but then you're born into this world, and this is essentially like a spiritual womb. This is now where your time on this world is to grow spiritually as maturely as you can. It's always a troubling thing if a baby is born into this world premature. They have to have special care. If they're born too premature, they do not survive. In this world, it's just, if you view it like the birth, you go through this life. You know, baby is born. They take their first breath. You know, eventually they take their first steps. And they speak their first words. And there's always these firsts, you know. First day they go to school, the first time they drive a car, the first date, and on and on. And of course, you wind up at the end, you walk that the other direction. You know? Last time, you know, your last day, the last time you do this, the last day, the last time you drive a car, the last time. And eventually you hit that point if you take your last steps. You speak your last words and you take your last breath, and then it's over. And what happens in between those things is your spiritual growth. And this answers of why we're here. The whole reason a baby's in that womb is to grow. You're here to spiritually grow. And you're going to get a different level of spiritual maturity. And just like when that baby's born, when you hit the end of this life, you can fight it, you can struggle, But just like when you were born into this world of trouble and tribulation, you're going to leave this world. I think it's helpful, instead of always thinking about it as quote-unquote death, you think about it as being birthed into the actual life. It's like if you watch a really long story or say an interesting movie or read a real an interesting book, and then you get to the end of the book and you find out that, okay, that's the prologue. Now the story begins. We go through this whole life, and you know what? This is the prologue. This isn't even life. This is just, okay, you went through the spirit, the physical growth in your mother's womb. Then you go into this womb, what amounts to this womb, and you do your spiritual growth. This is the prologue. All focused on this life. I hate to tell you, this isn't even the story yet. I don't care how old, young, old, whatever you are. If you're an old man, you've lived your whole life, and you're like, I've had this big, long life. I hate to tell you, this isn't the story for you. This is the prologue. The real story begins after you get birthed again into God's realm, into the eternal realm. That's when the story begins. This is all just the buildup. This is all just determines where you're going to, how healthy of a baby you're going to be born, essentially, how healthy of a spiritual being you're going to be born into in the next life. This is the problem with the simplistic, childish explanations of the MCC of you accept Jesus and you save and you go to heaven, and people think have this equality mindset, like, well, then everybody that's saved is going to be in the same spot in the kingdom of God. It's not. It's in the Bible. It's written that some are just going to get in by the skin of their teeth, like a man escaping the fire, naked, his clothes burned off his back. He got out, but I mean, he came in with nothing. I mean, he just barely made it in. Jesus used the illustration of the feast at the kingdom of God. You know, as everybody's sitting around eating at a table, he used the illustration of the feast of the kingdom of God to explain this. You've got somebody, he said, you know, don't show up and sit at the head of the table. You're going to embarrass yourself. See, what he was relaying here was that, you know, people are going to be at a different level of spiritual maturity. That means you're going to have a different thing to do. You're going to have a different, I don't want to say rank, but you're going to have more or less responsibilities in the kingdom of God, depending on how spiritually mature you are. You know, we can go into this. It's going to run a little long. I don't want to stop here, though, bear with me. You know, you're going to have different responsibilities. This is why he was talking about there's a ranking. I mean, yes, you made it in. Congratulations. You're not one of the people banging on the door outside that actually didn't make it in. They thought they did. They didn't. They're the ones that are going to be judged under the law. They didn't make it in under grace. Now you're in under grace. Okay, you've made it this far. Congratulations. But don't go sitting up there at the head of the table like you're somebody important. Because there's going to be people that got more spiritually mature in this life, and they were born into the eternal realm in a more spiritually mature position. It's like college students. You get a college student that has no clue. They think that, like, they have it in their head like they're the only one that ever went to college. And now I have my degree. And that means I'm smarter than everybody else in the world. Not every college student does that, but an annoying number of them do this very thing. Y'all know what I'm talking about, probably. I went to college and now I'm more, you know, the fresh college student that thinks they're smarter than everybody else because degree. And they went to college and they got a degree, as if they're the only ones that somehow managed to do this. And they think that's the end of it. I got my degree. But then they go and they get hired on at a place. And then they're shocked to discover they're the lowest guy on the totem pole. They're probably lower than the janitor. And they don't understand because you don't actually know anything. Your college degree, that was just the bare minimum. You hire on to a company, they're looking at you. I don't care what kind of degree you got. They're looking at you like you don't actually know anything because you don't. Yes, you might know the basic outline of how this should work, but you don't know the way we do it. You don't know the way this company operates. You don't know this manager's style and what he wants to see. You don't know, you know, the overall goal of the company. You don't know any of those things. You know some basics and you got hired. Congratulations. But don't be upset when they treat you like you don't know anything, because the fact of the matter is you don't know anything. You don't have any real-world practical experience. You see, what we're building up here, as we should be building up here, as spiritual beings, as Christian believers, we're building up our experience. We're building up. I always say we're getting our suffering out of the way now. We're growing to become as spiritually mature. We're getting experience. I mean, yes, your goal first and foremost is to be under grace, under Jesus Christ. Congratulations. Unfortunately, the MCC, this gets back to that nuts and bolts thing, the MCC stops there. Congratulations, you're under grace. You got it made now. You're supposed to be spiritual. You want to be as spiritually mature. You're getting as much experience so that when you go and you get hired, you go in there, you do know something and you're more used. There's childish, we're going to have to hurry up. I know I got to hurry up. There's childish belief that a lot of Christian believers have that, like, you know, the kingdom, what's the kingdom of God like? And if they can articulate it at all, they're basically telling you it's an eternal vacation. No, it's not. There's work to do. I don't understand it. Look, don't ask me what, because I don't know, but I know there is. There's a whole point to this. There's a reason, like, you know, there's different rankings at the table, as Jesus illustrated. You're going to have work to do. It's not an eternal vacation. But that's not, I'm not to say, like, you know, wage slave work, you know, like, oh God, I got to spend eternity. You're not going to spend eternity waking up and going, oh, I don't want to go to work today. Not that kind of work. I'm not talking about that kind of work. You know, you hear a story about, you know, say some entrepreneur. And, you know, they'll interview this guy and he's like, they're like, what's the secret to your success? And he'll tell you, and it's like, well, you know, I work 80 hours a week. And people are like, well, I ain't doing that. But he doesn't realize 80 hours a week is not the secret to his success. The secret to his success is it never seemed like work because he just liked what he was doing. He was successful in what he undertook. And you know, and when they ask him, the best he can come up with is, well, I put 80 hours a week in at this. If you put 80 hours a week in, you can be successful at anything. Well, no, you can't. If it's horrible drudgery that you don't like doing, no, you're not. The reason he put 80 hours of work in, the reason he could do that is it didn't seem like work to begin with. This is a blessing to know. I'm going to tell you, you may not realize it, but it's a blessing to know that we're going to have things to do in the kingdom of God. I don't know how many times in my life I've seen people and they're retiring, you know, and you're talking to this old guy and he's retiring. He's like looking forward to retirement. And, you know, you ask him, you're like, well, you're retiring next week, right? Yeah, boy, next week. Next Wednesday's my last day. I'm retired. And you're like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go fishing. I don't know how many times in my life I've seen people and they'll retire. They spend their entire life at some shitty wage-cucking job, and they hate it. Every day they hate it. And they just live for that day that they retire. And then the day they retire and they're so glad and they're like, I am out of here. I am done. And you know what happens 99% of the time, what I've seen? After about a vacation length of time, so say 2 weeks, maybe a month at the outside, usually around 2 weeks, they go out for that too. They retire. They're like skipping, you know, and they go fishing or golfing. And they're like, this is wonderful. I wake up. I don't have to go to work. I just go fishing, I go golfing and do what I want to do. And after 2 weeks of that, they're sick of fishing and golfing and they're sitting in their house going, now what? Because they lose their purpose. Now what? What do I do now? Okay, I've done all the fishing and golfing I can stand. I'm sick of fishing and golfing. What next? It's a blessing to know we're going to have purpose in the kingdom. I don't know how that works, but your purpose is partially going to be determined, just like being hired at a company in this world, by how much experience, how much maturity, how much spiritual growth you have managed. You're going to have more responsibilities, which is going to be cool. You don't want to be the guy that just comes. I mean, yeah, you want to be the guy that gets in. That's your first goal. Hopefully you listen to this. Hopefully you're there. I mean, that's the bare minimum. Getting under the grace system is the bare minimum. That's what I always say. That means that's where the work starts. It's not an eternal vacation. There's going to be rankings. There are going to be people way above you. There's going to be people that barely got in by the skin of their teeth. You want to get as far up the ladder as you can, not because of some kind of like corporate ambition mindset, but just because you want to be more useful. You want to find satisfaction in what you're doing. Anyway, we got to wrap up. I'm going way long. I'm over way long. I know I feel it in my bones of going way long. So we're going to wrap up on that now. I hope you guys come out. We got into a lot. in the Christian specific segment this week. I hope it didn't overload. It's all going to work out. So be excited. Don't be all down in the dumps. Yeah, life is suffering and overcoming trial, but there is a point to it. You know? If you put in hard labor on a project and it gets tiring, when you get the project done and you look and you've created something, there's always that sense of satisfaction. You know, there's always a sense of satisfaction. You don't mind the suffering so much if you understand there's a point to it. You know, nobody wants to suffer for no reason. Nobody wants to suffer and there's no payoff at the end. Nobody wants to suffer and there's no point in it. There's a point. It's good stuff. It's all going to be good. We're going to wrap up on that note. Again, I thank you for joining me. Thank you. If you got something out of it, I encourage you to put something in the plate. Means a lot to me. More ways than I can tell you. Thank you for joining us this week. And we're going to get on out of here. And hopefully I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.